and welcome to the Three Beards World Cup podcast. I am your host, Tom Miller. I am here with James Lewis of Manchester City fandom and Dr. Pete of Tottenham fandom. Dr. Pete, you just said something off air, which I think pretty much sums it up. Your thoughts on the first group of knockout matches?
I can't repeat what I said out loud, Thomas, on the air.
I bleep stuff out.
No, incredible 2 days of matches. I'm very happy that it was on the weekend and I could watch every minute of all four of those games, because there was drama, there was excitement, there was a coming out party, and man, was it exciting.
So I didn't really know where to start because all the matches were awesome. They were all decided on either penalty kicks or one goal. A ton of drama here. In general, when we do these podcasts, I like to start with the most exciting match or the match that grabbed the most headlines. And I guess we will start with Russia 1, Spain 1. Russia threw on a penalty kick shootout 4-3 here. A terrific save to end it by Akinfeev. And James, your thoughts on this match as a whole?
I thought Spain really did not look like they had a plan to score a goal. They had all the possession they wanted. They did their little sideways passes for a lot of the game. But when it came down to it, Costa was on a different page than just about everybody else.
Yeah.
Which I thought got a little bit better when Aspas came on. But I think for the most part, the Russians, they were packing the box a little bit, but I thought that they weren't really troubled by Spain's attack at all.
Yeah, I think that's a perfect way to sum it up. I was looking for headlines, and honestly, the one that was the best for me was Spain bores as Russia take the game on penalties. It was extremely boring from Spain across the board. Dr. Pete, you have a Spanish team that they're playing that tiki-taka style. They had Cesc Fabregas come out on whatever, I think he's working for BBC, and talk about how boring and how pointless the passing was, how there was no direction. And I was actually kind of happy that they got eliminated because of the way they played.
Yeah, it was not tiki-taka, because tiki-taka is moving towards a purpose, breaking down the defense. This was just passing the ball back and forth in the opponent's third of the field against an opponent who is happy to let you do it. It was 1,000 of the most useless passes I've ever seen in my life. They set the record for passing. Ba-dump, yay. I mean, just completely useless. And James is right. They really didn't have a plan. It was just like, well, we're going to maintain possession. And you knew exactly what Russia were going to do. They were going to sit back. They started the game with five defenders. One of those defenders is 38 years old, by the way.
Yeah, came out of retirement for the game.
And they were going to just try to counterattack. Well, they didn't even counterattack very well. But once it got to the 50 or 60th minute, they were just trying to grind it out and see if they could get the penalty kicks, which they did. And how could you fault their strategy? Because it worked.
Yeah, I mean, with Spain playing the way that they were playing, I think as the game went on, Russia, I think, saw that, okay, we don't need to be afraid of them playing this way. They're not dangerous at all. We can get something out of this. And their giant forward, Dzyuba.
Oh, he was great.
And he was just not afraid of Ramos or Pique. And he shouldn't have been.
Yeah, how good was Dzyuba up top, man? He's like, what, 6'4"? And he rattled around between Sergio Ramos and Pique. You have to say that he played a really strong 9 role. And you wonder if maybe he'll get a move after that. But Russia pushes forward now. You know, 1-1 is very respectable, especially since Spain got their lucky goal early. I mean, there was a little bit of a theme in this one, and it's been in a few matches before where there's a lot of grappling going on during free kicks and corner kicks. And in this case, Sergio Ramos is wrestled to the ground, and the ball actually hits the defender that's wrestling him to the ground in the back of the heel and goes into the goal. Ramos claims it, does a weird celebration saying, telling everybody to call him. I thought that was whatever. but it was ironic to me that, you know, the same... I hesitate to say arrogance again because we kind of described Germany's play that way, but you could see it from Ramos and Pique. They just seemed to think that they were overpowering Spanish squad from 2010. But, you know, in 2014, they got humiliated. And I was surprised that over the course of this tournament, all the matches that they've played in, they've really not looked that good. and they've played with their chins in the air like they should be moving forward. I mean, your FA is in disarray. You just fired your manager 2 days before the World Cup starts, and you still think that you are entitled to beat Russia on Russian soil, and I think they deserve to go out for that reason. They did get the own goal early. Augie shows up again here, guys. Augie is just on fire.
With his good friend, Mr. Penalty.
And yeah, sure. Sure. Augie, though, well past the record of 6, continues to score at a rapid pace. Harry Kane sitting behind him at 5 goals for the Golden Boot. It's going to take some doing to get past him. You know, we always talk about the odds on this show, and the odds for the own goals have started out in each match at around 10 to 1, and they are now at 4 to 1 per game. So you can see the bookies are seeing it. And, of course, a lot of it has to do with the way they're calling own goals. But, I mean, some of these are their own goals. That was an own goal today. There was no ifs, ands, or buts about it. And a lot of these own goals are very meaningful goals, obviously, because these matches are decided by one goal. But anyway, Spain gets the own goal there. It pushes them forward, but they didn't take advantage of it. Russia seemed a little bit shell-shocked after that. Going in towards the half, Spain had all the possession. But, James, like you said before, it was kind of meaningless Louis van Gaal possession.
I'm glad you put it that way. Yeah. there was no real intent in it. And I'm kind of sad that was an own goal. I would have wanted to see if they actually called it a penalty there, because he just wrapped his arms around Ramos from the start. He didn't even look for the ball. Wrapped his arms around Ramos, and they both went down. I wanted the ref to be given a chance to give that as a penalty without having to do a VAR replay.
Yeah, I agree, and that pops up again later in the match. But right around halftime, we were talking about strange own goals, strange mistakes by defenders, and you guys, we've already seen this in the World Cup. But the old Pogba handball trick, the Cristiano Ronaldo handball trick, when you're defending and you just throw your arm like straight up into the air and it hits your arm, that's what happens to PK in this one. The Spanish defender called for the handball. I'm not sure like how you protest that as a player.
So bad. It was such a stupid play. Like, yeah, it's like he was raising his hand in class to get called on.
It was Umtiti that did it before, right? The French defender, I think that's the other one that was called in this World Cup.
Titi just punched it. He didn't. That was at least this one. He had his back turned.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, no doubter here. Dzyuba, the towering Russian forward, smashes it home. And I think I read a stat about. I mean, I did read a stat about David De Gea's goals allowed in this World Cup, and I think he saw 8 shots and allowed 7 goals.
A lot of those shots, though, you look back at the goals that were scored on them, and most of them are not his fault. I mean, Ronaldo's free kick, a couple of penalty kicks, but...
Not his fault doesn't mean he shouldn't do better, though.
Yeah, he definitely could have done better, but I don't think he's the reason that Spain...
Oh, he's not.
That's just what I'm trying to say. And the people back in Spain in the past few days have been arguing over whether or not he should start in the World Cup game, which to me is... absurd. And it just goes to show you mentioned before that they had this entitlement about them, and Spain seems to think they're a world soccer power for some reason now, and I guess it's because Barcelona and Real Madrid are so good, but they have been terrible in the World Cup historically.
They have
1 win. They've never made it past the quarterfinals other than that 1 World Cup win they had, and I'm starting to think that it was just a golden generation.
Well, let's not forget that they did fire their coach 2 days before the World Cup started.
Well, they had the arrogance to do that, and I think a lot of other federations, if it was the U.S. Federation and something like that happened, I guarantee they would have said, you know, you shouldn't do that, slap them on the wrist, you need to apologize, blah, blah, blah.
That was definitely arrogance from the FA head. But
yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, but I didn't see arrogance from the team
on the field.
No, I saw like malaise. I saw lack of a plan. I didn't see arrogance from them.
Well, there was just no fight at the end of this game. Like the last 30 minutes, nobody's grinding it out. All these other teams, you see them and guys are falling over, completely exhausted from defending for their lives. And that just wasn't there for Spain. It wasn't there for Argentina. It wasn't there for Germany.
Yeah, but on a scale of 1 to Germany, I think they fall somewhere in between on the arrogance meter.
Yeah, on the arrogance meter, but in terms of their actual performance, they're right up there. Maybe higher.
I mean, in every match they played the same way that Germany did, I thought. I mean, they played like they were entitled to a win because of their badge, and they didn't get anything out of it, really. I mean, allowing three goals to Portugal I thought was embarrassing, and that was the best match they probably played in the World Cup, honestly. And another thing, Pete, you're talking about guys lying all over the ground, you know, laying out for things. You obviously didn't watch Jordi Alba play in this one because he was on the ground for 90% of the game or so. Like, every time he touched the ball, he'd be rolling around. Another one of those players that I have a hard time watching because he's so talented. But, man, just, like, just get up. Like, stay up. You get the calls, but...
I liked at one point he was sitting on the ground after having rolled around, like, kind of looking around, and then someone just bonked the ball right into his head. I mean, he was, like, sitting up, but it wasn't hard, and he just kind of, like, gets this, like, look on his face, like he's about to bust out crying. He kind of, like, looks around like, what? And we got a nice slow-motion replay of it on the feed, too, so...
Yeah, so no real fight in Spain here. They go through the extra time without a lot going on. There is an event that I want to talk about a little bit where there is a free kick being bent in and both Ramos and PK are grappled to the ground. I actually thought this was a penalty kick, but it seems that I'm in the minority when I'm talking to people about this. Pete, we'll start with you. What did you think about that play towards the end of the game where both the center backs were wrestled down? The ball landed right where they were.
No, I think they sold it more than it really was. I think there was definitely some contact there, but it wasn't like the pull downs where Harry Kane was putting a suplex move. This was more the Spanish guys trying to sell it. And to me, that late in the game, a free kick coming in, don't call a penalty kick to the side unless it's absolutely crystal clear.
Yeah, I agree with Pete on this one, actually. I think there was definitely contact, and there's definitely, you know, jostling for a position. But in that kind of context, you've got a bunch of guys all running to the same spot. I mean, people are going to be bumping into each other, and the defender sold it. The Spanish defender sold it there, but no penalty for me.
Okay, so the match goes into a penalty kick shootout. You could see Russia playing for that as the clock started to wind down, but you didn't really see Spain playing any differently. They weren't pushing forward or trying anything differently. It was that same sequence of passes where it was from Jordi Alba to Pique to Nacho, back into Ramos to Jordi Alba, and they just kept swinging it around on the back line, and I was like, this is one of the most boring matches I've ever watched. It's like watching Louis Van Gaal's Manchester United teams that Jose Mourinho famously said, play as if there are no goals on the field, and that's very accurate in this one. Isco, it seemed, was trying to make something happen, but the game plan from the players behind him was not to chip balls into Diego Costa. I mean, Diego Costa hardly touched the ball in this match, and like we said before, Spain deserved to go out. They deserve the... Russian roulette, if you will, of penalty kicks.
That's good, Thomas.
You're welcome.
Did you steal that?
I did. Football 365 had that one up.
I knew it.
Yeah, but the penalty kicks go through, and you have some interesting penalty kicks. I mean, like we said before, the conversion rate is around 70%. Igor Akinfeev is a difference as Iago Aspas goes up the middle, and Akinfeev... kick save and a beaut, like, boots it out of the stadium. Terrific.
Oh, man. That was an awesome save.
There is a great picture of him as the ball is hitting his foot and his face is just focused on the ball. Like, incredible concentration.
Akinfeev, of course, in the last World Cup in 2014, dropped the ball into the net. We're close to it, so it was a moment of redemption for him on home soil, and I'm sure Moscow is just going berserk right now.
Someone check him for performance-enhancing drugs.
Why do you gotta...
Somebody. Is there a committee that tests for these sort of things?
Why do you gotta...
Yes, they're in Moscow right now.
Oh, okay.
Why do you gotta... So, Russia is through here, much to the chagrin of Spain, but Spain deserved it, as we keep saying. And now Russia rolls through. All of this is leading towards the question that I'm going to ask when we get through a couple more matches. Keep your answers to yourselves. We'll get to it. Do you think there'll be a new World Cup winner? So we will see if that happens. In the next match, France plays Argentina. France 4, Argentina 3. Both of these teams, of course, have won the World Cup before, so they would be competing to win again. And this was an awesome match. from the excitement to Leo Messi during the anthem, looking cool, calm, and collected, and of course all of the goings-on of the Argentinian national team, you'd have to say, James, that Argentina was coming into this one as an underdog for sure.
Yeah, especially with all the turmoil around the camp. Definitely an underdog. I don't think anyone knew what they were going to do or what lineup they were going to put out.
Including their coach.
Aguero ended up not making the starting lineup, and it came out after the game that it wasn't because of footballing reasons. It wasn't because of tactics or anything like that. It was because of the comments he made from a previous game where he basically just said, let the coach say whatever he wants to say. So he sat Aguero, who ended up coming on, scoring a goal, and putting them back in with a shout at the end of the game to tie it up.
And I don't know if Aguero got the message, because he actually hand-fashioned his own V-neck shirt.
I saw that. It's like, wow, that looks fantastic.
I mean, if you're coming on as a sub in the 80th minute, do you fashion your own V-neck shirt beforehand? I can't imagine that he knew he wasn't going to start.
He knew he wasn't going to start. I don't even think he thought he was going to come on. Because you cut that, he just cut that for comfort. He's sitting on the bench, sitting back, needs a little bit of air, you know, make a V-neck.
Well, my headline for this one is Mbappe has arrived, France 4, Argentina 3. And in this one, so it starts out in about the 13th minute, the theme was very quickly established, and that was that Kylian Mbappe is really, really fast, Dr. Pete.
Yeah, it's not just speed, it's speed with the ball and acceleration. And the talent gap was so obvious. As soon as he made that run, 60 yards, and he turned Rojo around like a top, and Rojo just smashed him. It's really a shame that we didn't have a chance to see if he could just finish it, because that is not quite as good as Maradona's, but it's definitely up there. I mean, it was a 60-yard run, and he just absolutely torched four players on Argentina. I mean, it was incredible. And, you know, he hasn't gotten the headlines in terms of, he's not even the guy in his team who's gotten the most interviews, the most headlines, the most commercials. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to say that's probably Griezmann and Pogba.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you have to say that he's probably the most talented one on the team, right?
Yeah, and Pogba said that after the game. He said that Kylian Mbappe is the most talented player on France. And he had no problem saying that afterwards. And, you know, watching this match, he really should have had a hat trick in this one in the 13th minute when he got knocked off the ball by Rojo in a deliberate foul. I mean, there was some cover there, so not really a red card shout. But Griezmann gets the penalty kick and scores it, but definitely Kylian Mbappe's goal. And, I mean, from there, Kylian Mbappe just ran riot all over Argentina. I mean, Mascherano, I think, Pete, during the game you said, I mean, there's no way Mascherano survives this game.
Oh, yeah, he was matched up against Mbappe and Griezmann, and France knew that coming in. They knew Mascherano was going to be sitting in front of the defense, and it was a joke.
Yeah, he wasn't in it at all.
So going forward in the match here, Argentina, we thought that they would learn from their last match and drop Messi back to get more touches on the ball. But, Pete, you had a stat about the touches that Messi had in the box on the tournament, which I think is really telling to why Argentina is out of the tournament.
Yeah, I think he had 4 or 6 touches in the box the entire 4 games that he played.
That's so bad.
Terrible. But, you know, to me, this one boiled down to a monstrous talent gap. You know, man for man, France was just much better, and Messi's a great player, but a lot of the guys on his team were not great players, and they need to go home, figure out how to get some better players, otherwise they're going to end up in the same position in 4 years, because France's talent level is absurd.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, in this one, Di Maria actually smashes a ball that we were not expecting, James. In the 41st minute, belts a ball past Hugo Lloris, and all of a sudden, Argentina's back in it.
Yeah, that was a great, great goal.
Yeah.
I mean, coming into that game, if your game plan is, hey, let Di Maria have the ball and don't worry about it too much, you'd probably be doing okay. But turns out, in this game, it wasn't the right call. They gave him about 15 yards of space, just
terrible
sitting.
Defending.
Yeah, it was terrible. And he was just sitting out there, and he's like, all right, I guess I'll give it a shot.
So they go into halftime tied 1-1, and then Marcus Rojo actually gets subbed here for Fazio. He got owned by Kylian Mbappe for the entire half, and he was sitting on a dark yellow card and edging towards that red card. So, and that's not something that he's, you know, afraid to get if you've watched him for Manchester United or Argentina in the past. But the big surprise in this match to me, beyond Kylian Mbappe erupting, was that Argentina actually scored again and took the lead. Mercado scored 2-1.
I think this is where you saw France's true metal, and this is what makes me think, okay, they have a very good chance of winning the tournament. When you go down 2-1 and you're in the second half, you see some teams just fold and they can't get it done. Germany, in those games where they needed to win, they really couldn't pull it out other than Kroos's ridiculous free kick. But, I mean, they showed some serious metal, and overall, talent shines through. Mbappe was unbelievable, and man, I can't wait for France, Brazil.
That's gonna be Brazil still plays Mexico, but yeah, I see what you're saying there. We'll get there. So if you want to know what Dr. Pete looks like, just take a look at the next goal scorer for France. That would be Pavard of the French back line. That is what Dr. Pete looks like.
I'm not that willowy.
Maybe 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Hey, we called him Baby Dr. Pete. That's what we called him. But he scores a screamer as the ball gets kind of gets bent into the box, flicked out, bounces a couple times, and then he just wraps his foot around the ball and blasts a side volley that no one is going to stop, and all of a sudden it's 2-2.
The ball had so much spin on it. It's like he almost got he kept the spin going from the clearance that had come out to him. And just went with it and just whipped it around. The goalie had
unbelievable hit.
Yeah, zero chance of saving that shot. And I think everyone was a little bit surprised. He seemed a little bit surprised. He was apparently in tears after the game talking to his mother. I mean, it's a great moment for him.
Again, something that he and Pete would have in common.
Yeah.
As he scores, it's 2-2. It's 2-2 here. And then that man, Kylian Mbappe, shows up 6 minutes later and scores 3-2 now, and Mbappe just blazing all over the field.
Yeah, he was unbelievable, and I first saw him when he was playing for Monaco, and I was watching the Champions League 2 years ago, and he just took them on an incredible run, and I'd never seen him play before, and I'm just watching him, and I'm like, who is this guy? He's only 18 years old. Unbelievable, just the acceleration and the pace. But, you know, you've said before that you're a big believer in players not going to a big club before it's their time, meaning, you know, he's had Real Madrid and Barcelona and Arsenal calling for 3 or 4 years. And he's gone from Monaco to PSG basically to ensure that he's going to get as much playing time as possible, continue his development. He's very patient, and you have to imagine that after he's done at PSG, he's going to end up at Real or Barcelona.
City or one of those giants.
Yeah, I mean, PSG is still a very big club, but not in the same bracket as Barcelona and Real Madrid. And you're absolutely right. Playing time, he's getting it at PSG, and he's playing pretty well. And I think when Neymar leaves or whatever he decides to do, he'll be the man there. It's the only time, really, that I could say that, to me, his previous fees were too high. When they're talking about him for 180 million pounds, I was like, you know, this guy hasn't done enough yet to deserve that. And I think this match alone changed my mind completely as he took over. He scores a goal that's basically on a fast break, and he scores a goal in the box where he just cuts so hard, and the Argentine defenders are just sliding everywhere. They couldn't handle the cut, and then buries the ball. It's 4-2 now, France, in the 68th minute. And Mbappe, I mean, his teammates can't even chase him to the corner flag. It takes him so long to get there. He's so far ahead of them. It's ridiculous. Like, the guy is way far ahead of everybody else, carrying the team on his back. A little bit later in the game, 93rd minute, Kun Aguero does score a header and make it interesting. But you guys, you know, we've been talking about it since the preview. Argentina, to me, never had a chance to win this cup. Like, the goings-on of the FA, having Javier Mascherano as your defensive midfielder. Didn't we say that they had 15 different starting formations in 15 matches? They just didn't deserve to move any further forward.
Yep.
Thank you, James, for your dynamite drop in there. That's why we keep you around. Moving to the next match. Uruguay 2, Portugal 1, as the other best player in the world, Cristiano Ronaldo, crashes out in this one. Uruguay looking like that team that just has the scrappiness to win matches and could push them forward in the matchups here. And in this one, to me, it was difficult to come up with a headline, so I just ended up with Cavani takes Uruguay past Cristiano Ronaldo.
Yeah, both of Cavani's goals were top notch. I think he played the first his first goal, which was somewhere in between a chest trap into the goal and a nose ball directed into the goal.
Absolutely smashed into the goal. How it didn't go off his head, I have no idea, because it was smashed.
Yeah, so and right in the upper 90. I mean, and there was a great ball from Suarez. I thought initially he had taken the shot on, but it was just looking back at the replays, it was absolutely across right onto Cavani's face or neck or wherever it hit. But unstoppable. And then the second goal was just brilliant, taking a low pass across the edge of the box first time, just opened his body up and curled it around the keeper. Again, no keeper in the world is stopping that shot. He is absolutely I hope his injury isn't too serious. It looks like he pulled up with a calf injury.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would be a shame to not see him in that quarterfinal,
because he is absolutely integral to that offense doing much of anything.
Yeah, and this one, he was amazing. They were saying before that he scored his first World Cup goal in the last match. And Suarez in this one, also very good, bent the first ball into Cavani's head, which I think had a lot to do with the goal because it had so much pace on it. Pepe does score in between to make it 1-1 here. And, you know, Pepe, you have to say that he does show up in major tournaments when he's on the field and not getting a red card.
Yeah, he had a nice head ball here, and he's getting a little long in the tooth, but you know, he had a decent tournament, and I think that although he had a decent performance, if Ronaldo's not scoring in the game and Uruguay did a great job of keeping him out of the game, then Portugal essentially has no shot. And give credit to Uruguay's defense. I mean, this is a very good defense. That's the first goal they conceded in the World Cup, their first goal in the last 600 minutes of competitive football for their country. And Ronaldo didn't have a single touch in the area in the first half, and only one shot on target in the match. So they had a game plan, they stuck to it, and they got him through to the next round.
That defense is going to be seriously tested when it comes up against France, though, which is great, to me, is going to be an amazing matchup.
I want to talk about Godin a little bit here, because Godin is a huge part of that defense. And playing for Atletico Madrid, has had opportunities. He's won the league before, but never moved to the big boys, you know, stuck around Atletico Madrid. And Atletico Madrid is a respectable team in their own right, for sure. But, you know, I'm sure he's had options to go to another team for more money. And he just remains the stalwart, the stubborn stalwart at Atletico Madrid. And this one, he was excellent, put on a clinic. A defending clinic. He's getting a little older. I think he's 33, 34. And to see what he did against the best forward in the world in Ronaldo, especially as an aerial threat, was incredible. Did you guys notice at the very end of the match that Ronaldo actually picked up a yellow card and would have been ineligible in the next game if they had gotten through?
I didn't know that he would have missed the next match, but I did see him pick up that yellow.
That would have been something if they had ended up scoring at some point, but they did not. They did not. So my next question I'll ask both of you, I'll start with you, Dr. Pete. Ronaldo is out of the World Cup, and that was a headline. Messi is out of the World Cup, and that was a headline. When we talked about it in the previews, this is not a surprise to us because neither one of them really had a team around them. That begs the next question, which is being asked all over the media. Will Ronaldo play another World Cup? Will Messi play another World Cup? That's not the real question to me. The real question to me is, will Argentina and Portugal qualify for the next World Cup?
That is a good question. I think Argentina can reload, but they're definitely in danger of failing to qualify without Messi. And they just don't have a lot of good younger players, so they definitely have to reset. And if I was a betting man, I'd say that one of those two teams will not be at the next World Cup. I was interested to see if you guys thought that Ronaldo would even play in the Euro 2020. I think it was interesting that he's tied for the most games played in the World Cup and European Championship combined, 38 appearances. Bastian Schweinsteiger's the other guy, so
that's crazy.
I would think that he would play in 2020, but the World Cup in 2022 seems like a long shot to me. I mean, I wouldn't rule him out because he's such a athletic, fit guy, but I mean, that's a long time from now.
Even in 2020, he's going to be 35. And in 2022, he's going to be 37. I think he is absolutely in tremendous shape, so you can't take that away from him. But he might lose a step, you know? It's something you're going to have to see how it plays out over the next couple of years.
I think he'll lose a step, but I think his aerial prowess and his ability to find space in the box and his coolness on finishing will stay, and he'll still be a clinical player. I think he does play in the next World Cup if they qualify, and I think, you know, it's hard to say. It's 4 years from now, and in the athletic world, I mean, that could be
a million years.
Yeah, yeah, it's an eternity for sure, and you never know. I mean, he might finally get injured. The guy's never injured, you know? I mean, I hope it doesn't happen, but it could happen. I mean, it's a miracle that both him and Messi were so blessed that neither one of them really had any catastrophic injuries, knock on wood, and we've gotten to enjoy them for the last decade. But, you know, it just goes to show you how blessed we are with their health and how hard they work to keep it that way. And we'll see what happens with that. And I don't think the question for Ronaldo is a matter of wanting to play. I think that Portugal supports him. He supports his team, even though he carries them a lot of the time. Messi, on the other hand, I don't know if there's any reason for him to play anymore. There's nothing he gets out of it. He just gets booed, and, you know, he gets hatred thrown at him and all that kind of stuff. I don't know if there's a reason for him to continue.
I don't know. If they use this opportunity to just totally chop that team up and bring in all new faces that they build around Messi with, then maybe. But I think I don't know what needs to change in the locker room and the tactics of the coaching and the FA to make it to make them actually act like a team on the field. I don't think that there's any way Messi should not be a part of their plan, whether he decides to be or not.
Does he want to be? I mean, well, let's look at the lineup real quick for Argentina. Di Maria is 30. Messi is 32. I think he just turned 32. Is that right? I think he just turned 32. You also have Mascherano, who's 30 a million.
Four.
And I think he's 36.
He's 34.
He's an old 34, dude. He is an old 34. But yeah, I mean, even Kun Aguero is 29. Higuain, 29, 30. Like, these guys are, those are their stars there. Should you be building around Dybala at this point?
Yes.
Yeah, I think so too. I think you have to start doing that.
Who didn't even play it during this tournament?
He got 26 minutes.
And he didn't do anything in those 26 minutes. I think he's brilliant. I think really for Argentina, starting with the back line, resetting that, but I don't think it's going to be a priority for them. They're just always going to have attacking players. You'll have an emergence of another Argentinian star for sure. And whether or not Messi is that guy, you have to hope, if you're an Argentinian fan, that, you know, a 35-year-old Messi isn't what you're counting on going to the next World Cup, or your prospects are even bleaker than this one.
Going back to the original question, though, I think that both teams do qualify, but I think you're right. The question is, are the Messi and Ronaldo that would show up for those Argentinian and Portugal sides, is that enough to get those teams through? Is that what they need? Is a target man Ronaldo what Portugal needs to even be able to win? You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's a good question. That's a good question. But to answer it myself, I would say that Argentina does not qualify for the next World Cup. And I'm basing that on the strategy they have, the tactics they have, and the general disarray of their FA, combined with the fact they play in CONMEBOL. And I think the teams around them are excellent. And
they're getting better.
You just can't slip up. If there's anything we've seen in this World Cup, it's that the rest of the pack is catching up to the powerhouses, and you can't go in there and think that your badge or your stripes are going to win you anything.
Yeah, and the CONMEBOL, you know, Brazil's got a spot. So you got two spots, and Uruguay has shown that they're going to get a spot every qualifier too.
Uruguay 2, Portugal 1, and they move forward into the next stage, into the quarterfinals. France versus Uruguay, that game's going to be awesome. Last but not least, Croatia 1, Denmark 1. Croatia threw on penalties, and my headline for this one would have to be, Croatia gets through on penalties despite missing. Really not a good headline.
No.
That's a fucking terrible
poor headline.
Again, someone needs to work with a copywriter to get these worked down to maybe a sentence, or, you know, five words or something like that.
All right, I'm going again. Croatia picks up Modric's penalty miss and goes through. This game, to me, was the most evenly matched game coming in all facets. I thought Croatia had a slight edge, but I could see Denmark squeaking through. And Dr. Pete, this one was as entertaining as the rest of the matches we had to see.
Yeah, and I think that Denmark had a great plan going into this one. They were planning on playing solid defense and shutting down Modric, making sure he didn't get the ball. And he had very few critical touches in the first half in this one, and it just got worse in the second half for him. And the game could have ended very, very badly for him. But I'll give him credit for stepping up and hitting that second penalty, because I can't imagine anything that's harder than hitting a penalty kick in a shootout after you've just missed a penalty kick to potentially win your team the game.
Yeah, in the 116th minute. But this game actually started with a bang, James. A goal within the first minute, Jurgensen puts Denmark up 1-0, and it was game on from there, and you thought that all of a sudden, I mean, Denmark had the momentum.
That goal, I thought I was watching the MLS. classic like long MLS throw. Goal. All that was missing was like the somersault long throw, but he got it there. And then a nice old scramble at the far post about 6 yards out, and the ball just kind of trickles in.
An MLS scrummer.
Yeah, an MLS scrum goal. Made me feel really comfortable. It's what I'm used to seeing. So it was good. It was great. It was a great start. And then I like the way that Croatia responded to that.
Mario Mandzukic, I love him. He plays in huge matches. He scores big goals in big matches for Juventus and Bayern. I feel like he's, if you want to win something, put him on your team. And he shows up and scores here as well.
Best facial expressions.
Yeah,
too.
I was going to say, he always has that same, it looks like half mad, half perplexed.
Yeah, well, I mean, Phil Jones is up there, but I'll give you Mandzukic a little bit. Super Mario grabs a goal in the fourth minute, and it's suddenly 1-1, James. And this game, I mean, you had no idea where it was going to go from here.
No, it was really good, and it was, you think not scoring for the rest of the game, it could have been boring. They could have been passing around like Spain, trying to unlock a defense. But it was really a lot of end to end stuff and really intense. And I was really impressed by Denmark. I thought that I knew they had a good team and they did well in the group stages. But I did not see them living with Croatia in this game. They did a great job of limiting Modric, as Pete said. Rakitic was also pretty quiet as well. So I think they definitely came in with a plan and executed it and really frustrated Croatia for a lot of this match.
Yeah, you had two tactically sound teams here, which has been a little rare in this World Cup between the heavy hitters going out early and, you know, Lionel Messi and Cristiano Ronaldo's teams just looking tactically inept. You have two teams here that, like you said, had good plans and ended up playing a really... I thought it was a tactical match, and I thought it was a good match. I could see how a neutral would be bored by it, but I didn't think so. I thought it was really, really good. It goes all the way through to extra time. As Dr. Pete mentioned, Modric gets a penalty kick in the 116th minute and gets saved. Just a monster save in the 116th minute, Dr. Pete. I mean, how do you reset from there, like you said, but what do you do if you're Croatia?
Yeah, I thought going into the shootout, Schmeichel was going to be ready to go, and he was. He saved two, but Subasic was just better than he was, and Denmark didn't show up for the shootout. I have a question for you guys, though, before we get to the shootout stuff. Don't you think that on that PK that the striker has got to find a way to get that ball into the goal before, you know, he's in the process of getting fouled, but like... Get your knee on the ball, get your toe on the ball. There's nothing between you and the net. I know you're tripping, but if he doesn't score there, they miss the PK and they lose. I mean, that guy's never going to live it down. You've got to get that ball in the goal.
I think he tried. I think he got fouled from behind and he went down. I mean, after that, you're just scrambling.
All you have to do is get anything on it, though. Get a knee, a foot, your head, whatever. There's nothing between him and the goal. He just stumbled and fell, lost his balance. And I mean, it was a good foul. It should have been a red card, as we talked about before. But I mean, that is a hell of a foul. And it almost saved them from getting eliminated.
But it didn't, though. You gave up the penalty. That's a good, not a good foul, because, I mean, he had to do it. Right,
yeah,
he had to do it.
It's a good foul.
It's a good foul. But I mean, yes, it's a good foul. He should have had a red card. That PK should be scored. So, you know, they should have been going out before it got to penalty kicks.
Yeah, I would agree with that. It should have been scored, but it was blocked, and Subasic just showed he looks monstrous in the net on those penalty kicks. Didn't he look monstrous? Like Courtois,
yes,
towering up. It just looked like he was taking up the entire goal and played like it as well. As Croatia goes through on penalties here, they're going to play Russia. You have to say that, you know, Russia... they have the scrap, they have the fight, and they're at home. They could get through here. This could be like that South Korean run in 2002.
God, I hope not. I mean, there's so many reasons why I hope that doesn't happen. And I don't have anything personally against the Russian players, but I'm more let down by the teams that they've beaten to get here, let's put it that way, than impressed by the way they've been playing.
Yeah, I think that's fair. We had started the show by asking if there will be a new winner, and we'll take a look at the Vegas odds on this one. Pete, you asked me what they were, and I think that's a good indicator of who's favored and who is a long shot. Brazil and France sit at 4-1. Croatia is next at 6-1. England, of course, has won a World Cup before, but it's been a long time, since 1966. They're at 6-1. Belgium has never won a World Cup, and they're at 7-1. Uruguay, 15-1. Uruguay has two World Cup wins way back in like the 30s, and I think right around 30s, 40s, like 1930 and 1938, I think. Colombia is at 20-1. Russia's at 22-1. Switzerland at 40-1. Mexico at 40-1. And I think Japan is at 250-1, which actually I think is worse than what they had when they started the tournament.
They've somehow been downgraded.
Which I think is really mean.
Yeah. Hey, great job, guys. You got further than anyone expected. You have less of a chance to win now than you ever have.
Yeah, yeah. Well, part of that could be their next matchup. Let's go back a little bit because we didn't cover these matches. We're just going to cover them really quickly. The last day of the group stage with Japan, Poland, Senegal, Colombia, Panama, Tunisia, and England versus Belgium. So we had an interesting combination of things happening in the group with Poland, Japan, Senegal, and Colombia. I mean, for a while, Senegal, while on a draw, was through, and then Colombia went through with their goal. And Senegal actually eliminated in this one on FIFA Fair Play, thus taking out all the African nations that showed up for the World Cup. But do you guys have anything to say about the tiebreaker used here as Senegal is eliminated?
It's a tough way to go out, and a lot of people will say that it's silly or stupid or unfair. I would say that Senegal in the group matches got two yellow cards for elbowing people in the face. And if they avoid doing that, they're through.
Yeah.
So maybe it's not so bad after all.
I think you just have to come up with a better way to find a way to get teams going through.
That is tiebreaker number 5 though, right?
Yeah.
That's the fifth one down the list.
But you had two groups that were probably going to be decided on that if Belgium and England had grinded out to a draw, which they were trying to do. But these teams, you know, the World Cup's every 4 years. It's such a big deal. Like, you need to find a better way to separate two teams. I mean, this would be impossible to plan. It's never going to happen. But if you could arrange for those two teams, if they're tied on everything else, have them have a shootout.
Wake them up in the middle of the night. Wake them up.
No warning. Random time. Random day.
Could you imagine if you set up a shootout and had 24 hours to think about it? You could sell 60,000 tickets for $100 a pop.
That would be unbelievable.
So you could make the money, and that's all that FIFA cares about anyways.
Yeah.
I mean, that would be way better than deciding between yellow cards. You could do it on the day off before the matchups for the next round. I mean,
couldn't you just do it right there after the match, because both of those matches are being played at the same time within 2 minutes or 3 minutes of the one final whistle? You know what the other score is too.
That's very true. Yeah, that's a good idea. I like that thought. Japan loses to Poland here 1-0, but finishes second in the group, which is a surprise. And their reward is that they now play Belgium. And, I mean, they're just happy to be going forward, I'm sure. And, you know, in this one, Belgium-England match, I was reading some reports on it, and the English media was split on saying that, oh, we lost all the momentum, you never play to lose. This is a horrible match. I don't really want to talk about it. Januzaj scores by accident, and Roberto Martinez, the Belgium manager, doesn't even want to celebrate because he's mad that they're on the left side of the bracket where Brazil is and France is. So, you know, Belgium wins 1-0 over half of an England squad that both teams were playing all of their backups. Januzaj scored. I said that already.
Januzaj, he just can't do anything right.
Former Manchester United, I guess, wonder kid for a little while there, James. I know you want to take some shots, but I'm not letting it happen.
I don't need to. You just called him a wonder kid.
Well, he came back. What did you call him? Billy Big Boots or something like that? He signed a contract after scoring a few goals, came back as Billy Big Boots, and new haircut, new style, and then proceeded to essentially play himself off the team and then get relegated, I think, twice. Once with Sunderland, and now he's in Spain.
If you need your team to get relegated, he's the man for the job.
He scores in this one in a really drab match, but England looking forward to playing Colombia. It's a knockout match. A lot of hope now in England, which is probably really dangerous. Colombia is a good team, but James, they're missing James Rodriguez, most likely, and he is an amazing World Cup player.
If James can come back for this game, I think that England has a lot of trouble with Colombia.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're going to struggle to deal with the pace with their defense. And James has a goal in him. I think Falcao has a goal in him. I think this could be big trouble for England here. I'm not very high on the English team either.
Fine. I think that it's one of those things where we're in the knockout rounds now, and all these teams are very tightly contested. With the exception of the games that are on Monday, Brazil-Mexico, I would imagine Brazil taking it to Mexico, maybe because I'm a rival and I really want them to lose, but I think that Brazil is starting to find their form, unlike any other big team in the tournament so far, with the exception, I guess, France is looking better, but they allowed 3 goals. Brazil, on the other hand, I think will take Mexico apart.
So I think Mexico is in trouble, and I almost feel bad for their fans that they ended up playing Brazil. But if they had showed up for the last game against Sweden, then they wouldn't be playing Brazil. But I don't think they have any shot in that game. Expect Brazil to go through without any problem. I mean, if Mexico were able to win that game, we've talked about it before, it'd be the biggest win in their country's history. But then they get to face France. So Mexico has virtually no shot at winning the tournament at all. And real quick, while we're talking about Brazil, I'm going to ask you guys, so 3 teams in 2 seconds, what finish would you say would be a disappointment for these 3 teams? Brazil.
Disappointing for Brazil would be to lose, period.
So to not win the tournament.
To not win the tournament, yeah.
Yeah, I think getting to the final, anything other than getting to the final is a failure for them, and I think they probably have their eye on winning it.
France.
I think getting into the final, I don't think that they have to win. I think they're just to get to the final.
I think coming into the tournament, they probably would have been happy with the quarterfinals. I think now they should feel like semifinals is a success, and they can definitely push on.
And the last team is England.
I think they got to be happy every day they're still in it.
I mean, you joke, but that's kind of true. They were so bad in 2014 and not much better in 2010. Disappointment in 06, 02. I mean, you just go back through the years of disappointment. And I think at this point, I think it's a success if they make it to the quarterfinals.
Yeah, I'd agree with
that. I think that's fair.
They've had teams as talented or more talented than this team come to World Cups and just fail at the first real hurdle. Yeah. And Colombia is going to be a real hurdle.
I agree. They are going to be a real hurdle, but they're, you know, it's an easier hurdle, I guess.
They're
going to
be favored.
Hurdle. They are. They're going to be favored, and it's not Argentina. It's not Batistuta's Argentina.
James is huge, though.
Yeah, he is. If James plays, it's a big deal, but you have to see where the England mentality is. They seem to be doing all right, but you never know. I mean, you really don't. I think they need a goal early to settle and not have a nervy finish. I think that's essential.
I just think they don't do well as the favorites, and I think it's gonna bite them.
Yeah, some other favorites we have on Monday, Belgium versus Japan. You have to say that Japan is ecstatic to be where they are, and Belgium got to switch off for the last match against England, and whether or not that'll matter, we'll find out, but I would say that Belgium's heavily favored here. The other match on Tuesday, Sweden versus Switzerland, a very neutral match. I'm interested to see if either one of you guys could pull a favorite out, or you're just expecting a draw and then penalty kicks.
I think it's going to be Switzerland because they have Shaqiri, who can make a difference in a match. He's a big game player. I think he'll show up in this one and put the Swedes to bed.
Yeah, I think Switzerland's been very consistent and they are going to grind out a win in this one.
I think that's fair. I really, honestly, I'm having a really hard time deciding. I'll have to do more reading and wait until the lineups come out to see if I can pick a winner here. First glance, I guess Sweden, just because they played in a hard group and got out anyways. But they won the group. So tight. Yeah, they're so – these two teams are really tight. A lot of awesome soccer coming up. And, I mean, you had the knockout matches. But then, guys, after Tuesday, we have a break all the way through Friday as the quarterfinals start. And you're going to get two matches a day still, but they're going to be on the weekends mostly. So, I mean, we got – Friday and Saturday, and then Tuesday and Wednesday, and Saturday and Sunday, James. So, you know, you can get back to work.
Not looking forward to it.
Anyway, anything you guys want to add about the first few matches of the knockout stage?
I can't wait to see what the rest of the knockout stage has to offer. 10 goals in the first day.
Awesome. All decided by one goal or penalty kicks. James?
All the matches are really intense, and every team knows that that, you know, they're within touching distance of getting to the semifinals or the finals. In any of these games, any team can win, and we've seen that with Russia defeating Spain and Denmark really giving Croatia a run for their money. So it's been amazing to watch.
Yeah, I'm also ecstatic about the way the whole entire tournament has gone. I say it all the time, but between the goals, the lack of 0-0 draws, the lack of red cards allowing play to go on, the penalty kicks that are called correctly because of VAR and how quickly they've gone through with that, I've been really excited about the tournament, and I'm just sad that the United States isn't in it, because I think if they were, then we would pick up a lot of fans of soccer from a neutral perspective, because these matches are on at times where people can watch or at least the highlights, and it seems like the United States is missing out by not celebrating this tournament. So we hope it continues, and we hope that none of these games are decided on red cards and own goals, but that's the drama of the World Cup, and you can expect it every single time. Hopefully we have a new winner at the end of this one, but you know, you never know. It could be just the old tried and true Brazil. So, for Dr. Pete and James Lewis, I am Tom Miller saying I hope everybody has an awesome week.